How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
DL working Jamal Crawford into the post, flares to the corner, touch pass to Ingles, bounce pass to Hayward. Penetrate to the 45, scoops to Favors, power dribble, ball faking to finish.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 23rd of May.
Bitch!
We're going to stop it. I'm tired of it. I cannot handle the constant haranguing, complaining from media members, from fans, from everyone else. We are going to address it and stop it today on Locked On Jazz. Plus, player in review is Derek Favors, which is quite a mystery. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. And if you can't tell... I'm tired of the constant complaining, haranguing, whining of everyone out there right now. And I'm going to address it today. That Warriors are destroying the game and Kevin Durant is the worst thing that's ever happened. And the inconsistency of the logic of everyone complaining about it incessantly is overwhelming to me. Overwhelming. And so I'm going to touch on it. Plus Derek Favors. Today's show is brought to you by a nice guy. He would never be like I am right now. His name is Devin Cash. And Devin Cash is of Equity Real Estate. And he has been one of the original sponsors of Locked On Jazz from the very, very beginning. And Devin is here to be a realtor for you, to give you a great experience. He gave two free Jazz season tickets to anybody who bought or sold a house with him this year. He's up to something again this year. You can find out. But what's cool about Devin is that he's helped out numerous people, and everyone comes back with the same thing. Interpersonal relationship, both with you and with the other agents and with other people involved to help you get a deal done. In fact, Zach Campbell wrote to us and said, there's absolutely no way we would have got the place we got if it wasn't for Devin's relationships. Then the cool one we got from Kyle was about how he and his wife were very had been pressured by a bunch of other agents into the process. And Devin's genuine level of care changed everything about the process. The biggest surprise working with Devin, he said, was his personal tact. We were not planning on moving for at least 6 months, so I was apprehensive on how he would handle the situation, but he was great. He kept in touch, but at no point ever came across as pushy, impatient, or uninterested. When I explained to him I had been proactive because of how big a change this would be, he was nothing but had empathy and understanding. These are the stories we're getting from people who've worked with Devin Cash. He loves working with first-time home buyers. If you're out there and you're looking to get in the market or possibly move your current house, call Devin at 801-759-1495. In fact, you know, summer is a good time. Kids are out of school. So if you're suddenly looking into the process of doing this, have Devin do a market analysis of your house. You can call him at 801-759-1495. 801-759-1495. All right, let me get to my gripe here on this. I'm listening to two different complaints from people in the end that are fans of the NBA right now, and neither of them hold any logic. One is that they hate Kevin Durant because he coupled up with the best players and the old-time guys would never do it. Larry Bird never played with less than two Hall of Famers on any roster he ever had. And that doesn't count himself. So there was always three Hall of Fame players on every team that he ever played on. Magic Johnson got drafted onto a team with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. If these players in that era could have changed teams with free agency or had needed to, they probably would have. So the argument that the old guys would never do it is completely faulty. Moreover, The number one complaint I hear all the time about players is all they care about is the money. Kevin Durant bypassed like $100 million to be able to go put himself in a situation where he could be on what might be the greatest team in the history of the game and win. He's just evidently more than people like, too much so, to win, right? LeBron bypassed a bunch of money to put a team together in Miami so that they could win. He was never the highest paid player on his team until now. Cleveland bypassed Andrew Wiggins to get Kevin Love to put a team together so they could win. And that's no different than what most people ever ask. I don't want the players to play for money. I want them to play to win. I would play this game for one. I would play for free. No, you wouldn't actually, but that's another terrible argument, but we'll just go with that. Okay? So the first argument is that, well, the old guys would never do this. It's just not true. It's fundamentally not true. And by the way, how did Kareem Abdul-Jabbar end up on the Lakers? Oh, that's right. He forced his way out of Milwaukee so he could go to LA. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot about that. So not only is it not true because they could have if they wanted to, but they didn't do it because they did do it when they could. The second argument that's fundamentally flawed is the idea, oh, I just want guys to win. Okay, that's what they're doing. Evidently too much so. The third argument that's the worst of all, they're ruining the game. They've destroyed the competition. Now, that just means that your team lost, and so you're pissed, which is great. You should be. But the game, this idea of having Cleveland and the Warriors as dominant powers heading toward the finals is not new. Look at the NBA from 1979 to 19 ever. The heyday of the NBA is that Magic and Larry come into the league in 79, and Magic carries the Lakers to the finals against the 76ers in this incredible beginning of an era. The Lakers played two series that year. Before that, they won 4-1 and 4-1. The 76ers won 4-1 and 4-1. It wasn't close. Then 81-82, 3 years later, the Lakers play the 76ers, and the Lakers go 4-0-4-0 to get there. It wasn't close. It was a dream team put together of Hall of Famer Magic Johnson, Hall of Famer James Worthy, Hall of Famer Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, with the best sixth man in the league, and Michael Cooper was probably the modern-day Draymond Green. This wasn't close. Former number one pick Michael Thompson was still on some of those teams, I think. The 76ers that year played a great seven-game series with Boston, so there were three good teams. Maybe exactly what we would have had this year if Kawhi Leonard wasn't hurt. Maybe not, but maybe. In 82-83, the 76ers sweep the Lakers, same exact two teams. Lakers go 4-0, 4-1 to get there. They win 9 more games than anyone else in the entire Western Conference that year. And yet this is the Showtime heyday of the NBA. 83-84. The Celtics win 10 more games than anybody else in the East. They do go to 7 with the Knicks in a surprising series and then roll 4-1. The Lakers roll through. They lose 3 games on the way. And they win 6 more games and the two teams match in the finals. And guess who plays in the finals again the next year? The Celtics and the Lakers. Well, it was like we do, like, this is a terrible season for the NBA this year because we've known the entire time who's going to play in the finals. We knew who was going to play in the finals virtually every single year of the 80s, and we refer to it as the greatest time ever. And it's not like we thought Michael Jordan wasn't making the finals in the 90s. Right? Like, let's be honest about what this league is about. It's about... And the game is about that a possession goes to the hands of the best players. And unlike Major League Baseball, where if you go to watch Mike Trout play because he's the best player in the game, you get to see him once an hour and he impacts the game about 10% of the game. And let's not kid her. And unlike the NFL, where the quarterbacks are mammothly important but only on half the ball, these guys dictate everything. The best players dictate everything. So when you have 2 or 3 Hall of Famers on your team, like we've always had at some point in time in the NBA, they win. 84-85, the Lakers have 10 more wins than anyone else in the NBA. They go 3-0, 4-1, 4-1, and go into the finals. Right? Celtics go 4-2-4-1. 85-86, the Rockets pull an incredible upset and beat the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. It would have been the comparable of the Spurs beating the Warriors this year, which, had Kawhi Leonard not gotten hurt, who knows? But otherwise, that's not particularly close either. The Celtics are 10 more wins than anyone else. They go 3-0, 4-1, 4-0. 86-87, Lakers have 10 more wins than anybody else in the West. They go 3-0, 4-1, 4-0. Guys, this isn't new. 86-87, the Celtics are beginning to age. They go 4-3 against the Bulls and 4-3 against the Pistons, and it's the sign the Pistons are coming, and we turn the page. A third team, now a new great team arrives. It's Detroit, and they go to the finals for three straight years. And in the meantime, the Lakers begin to age a little bit, and then they bounce back to go 3-0, 4-0, 4-0 to get to the finals in 89-90. This is not new. This is not superstars getting together to destroy the competitiveness of the game. This is what the league is. It's how it works. It's how it's always been. It's what it was in its heyday. It's why this will be looked back as a heyday. Two of the greatest teams in the history of the NBA matching up in the finals. And the fact is, I get it. Your team lost to one of them, and it sucks because none of us are close to these two teams, but nor has anyone ever been close to the best teams in the NBA every year. How's that? All right, I had to get that off my chest. But that's the reality of the league. I'll be curious your comments to that. It's the truth. That's the truth. The other garbage that every 24-hour news cycle is throwing out there, that everybody else is trying to throw out there because they need to talk about stuff, it's make-believe. This is what the game is. It's either, I guess you could say, the weakness of the game or the strength of the game. But it's the reality of the game of basketball. That the ball goes in the hands of a guy, and at the end of possession, if he's better than your guy, they win. And if you have a bunch of guys that are better, they certainly win. All right, let's do our player summary. Derek Favors. Pretty interesting, isn't it? Boy, how do you characterize Derek Favors' year? Is just an injury-riddled year. He just never could get healthy. It kind of matches to the number one thing I said of the offseason, the Utah Jazz. And when Dennis Lindsay was asked about it, he said, "This is on me." You know, what's going on? What has to happen for the Jazz players to get healthy? Now, Dennis Lindsay made a very interesting comment about Derek Favors, that he was unhealthy at the end of last year. His offseason was so tentative, and then he never got healthy. He got injured in the preseason. Whereas healthiest point he was at any point all season, according to Dennis, is now. Meaning he should be able to go into this offseason with a little, maybe more vigor and more ability to improve his game and improve his body and get his weight down to where it needs to get to. So a summary for Derek Favors is an injury-riddled season which barely had flashes of the brilliance. I mean, that's to me the saddest thing of Derek's season is that this is a guy who last March and destroyed Anthony Davis, destroyed DeMarcus Cousins, was killing guys. And we didn't even see that. And when the back started to get hurt, the mid-range shot went away. All the things that he had kind of worked on to develop just started to disappear. And he became 50 games, 24 minutes a game. He only played over 30 minutes seven times, second lowest field goal percentage of his career. Against Milwaukee, he showed a flash of 19-7-2. Against Sacramento, I think it was, he showed a flash. He had six field goal attempts in transition all season. Six field goal attempts in transition all season. This is a guy who used to be an athlete who could outrun people. He now can't run. He's not a good post-up player. It's 49% on post-ups, which is better than most guys in the league, but it's not a great level. Much better on the left block than the right block. His face-up game is not developed. If he goes to the right block and then he wants to straighten up on you, he's 0 for 10 shooting this year. Shooting off the pick and pop was 44%. The shooting that he had during the year got worse as the year went on, which was too bad. So from 8 to 16 feet in the regular season, he shot 45%. You got him outside 16 feet, he shot 35.4%. So that mid-range jumper overall was at 37%. Now, if we go post All-Star break, it's kind of a funky little, you know, hard to tell where. Post All-Star break, that mid-range drops to 32. Outside 16 feet, he's 2 of 12. You know, he just, I don't know when you want to look at his, you know, what his game log was where we decide the injuries got worse or he just never got right. But it just was a season where he never got right. And I, you know, you've watched now, plays 62 games last year, 50 games this year, 74 prior. So his last 3 years are 74, 62, 50. That's unnerving. You know, the inability for him to stay healthy, and how rarely he played post All-Star break is definitely, it's unnerving. I don't think there's any other, you know, way to say it. He comes out of the All-Star break. He has that great game against Milwaukee. He has like 6 double-figure games post All-Star break and feels a little better, but then, you know, really shuts it down from March 6th to April 7th. Prior to that was November 14th to December 14th, he's out for a month. It's just too bad. You know, if we look at, if I put a custom look back to that first injury and go to December 14th to, you know, May, you know, the end of the year, basically. And his mid-range shooting is at 37%. And then you just kind of walk that December game up to, let's take it a month forward to January. And what you start to see is as the year went on and the back bothered him more, the shooting starts to fall. And that's what was too bad. There's a stretch there where that mid-range game was a little better. He's really worked hard to develop it. But this is just not the same. The number that strikes me more than any other is that 6 field goal attempts in transition all season. That's what's striking. Now, here's the positive that gets interesting. When he and Rudy are on the floor together, we're dominant still. You know, it's cumbersome. The floor is not open. It's not natural to what Quinn likes to do. But when they played 486 minutes together. The defensive rating was a 97.4, and the offensive rating was a 106.8. And post All-Star break, it was plus 11. It was even better. Now, the question I said all season long about Derek was, could, and it probably, now it's unfair to judge it, but this is what I thought would be the story of the season all year long, is when Derek Favors is in the game at center without Rudy Gobert, or with Boris without Rudy Gobert, could we defend well enough? And could we be good defensively? And the answer was no. The defensive rating this year when Derek Favors was on the floor and Rudy Gobert was off the floor was a 107. That's a huge number for the Jazz to analyze going forward. If we really want to play small and Derek is going to play some as the backup center, we weren't good in those minutes. In the 645 minutes where Derek played more minutes this year with Rudy off the floor than on the floor. When Rudy's on the floor with Derek, we're plus 11. We're dominant. 96.5 defensive rating, dominant. When Rudy leaves the floor and Derek is the center, our defensive rating goes to 107, which is below average. That's problematic. And that's where that's the one aspect that really we needed to have take place this year, was to be able to be dominant defensively for 48 minutes, and we weren't able to do that. Is that injury? Is that Derek's not a center? What is it? And if Derek's not a center, there aren't a lot of power forwards anymore that look like Derek Favors. They're 6'10", 265 without a back-to-the-basket game, without a refined back-to-the-basket game. He's better, but it's not his strength, and it's not a high percentage play. So, you know, who are the old-school powerhouse power forwards that play power forward in the NBA? So there's DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, whatever you think they are, but AD's popping out if he's the power forward. There's Zach Randolph, just, you know, on his last leg. There are not a lot of, from an offensive standpoint, power forwards like Derek Favors. From a defensive standpoint, when Derek and Rudy are on the floor, Derek can go out on the floor, defend, and then Rudy is able to still protect the rim, and it's an incredible combination. It's why the Jazz, Derek Favors is the reason the Jazz beat the Clippers, because he could go defend Chris Paul out at 24 feet in a way that Rudy couldn't. And that allowed the Jazz to be able to do some things defensively that they weren't able to do otherwise. And without Derek in that series, the Jazz would not have had enough firepower to be able to defensively to be able to stop Chris Paul. Derek Favors' ability to go out on the floor and guard Chris Paul is something Rudy doesn't do well. So this is an incredibly skilled, talented player who's got to figure out what his role is in the modern NBA. Future contract, he's a bargain. He's a $10, $11 million player. On one level, here's your Jazz options with him. You keep him because if he's your starting power forward and your backup center for $11 million, it's like one of the best contracts in the entire NBA. It's 10%. Of your cap for a guy who's going to start for you, power forward, and play backup center. There's no better bargain you can get. You let Trey Lyles develop for another year behind him and play the power forward with him, and hope that Trey has a better year, and you make sure you got time for Trey and he has a role in the team. There's no better bargain. If Derek wants to get paid at the end of this next year, it's unlikely it's going to happen here. Okay? Just because of the circumstances. So, and the salary situation. But I don't know what Derek's got to reinvent himself in the league to get paid a year from now. Trying to trade Derek with those games and get something back for him with the game played numbers of the last 3 years, I think it's going to be very difficult. And for exactly what we're talking about, what is someone going to envision Derek's role on their roster to be? So I think the best answer is Derek comes back, hopefully has a healthy season, works with, and maybe you lose him in free agency for nothing in a time period in which, you know what, you've got to be cutting salary anyway. But having Derek back next year, you're dominant defensively and you're getting a starting power forward and a backup center who hopefully is more agile and has a better defensive year for a bargain. I think Derek Favors is one of the best assets we have on this roster for the dollar figure he's under. It's unfortunate for him that that's true, but I would think the value you're getting back for trading for Derek Favors is minimal at best for what he can possibly bring you next year at the salary he has. And I'm pretty excited that he would be the starting power forward again next year. With then you're going small as the game goes on. You can play big. And this defensive roster is dominant with him on the floor, and you work from there. And the value of what you would get in return, or the old saying, you can't let him go for nothing. I don't think the value of what you get back is worth it. And letting him go for nothing if he finds another spot I would say, is not as bad as it seems, because at some point you just have to be letting – there's a value to having something go without something coming back, frankly, from a number standpoint. All right, that is Locked On Jazz today, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Have a great day. Today's show is brought to you by Devin Cash of Equity Real Estate. Give Devin a call at 801-759-1495. That's 801-759-1495.